Willkommen.
And bienvenue.
I'm Shelby.
And I'm Finley. And this is Bravo to Broadway, your go-to podcast for all things Bravo.
And all things Broadway.
All right, Shelby, let's get into our rant of the week. What's yours?
The rant of the week. All right, I'm starting things off on a somewhat silly, privileged note here. And one of my very best friends is getting married in like 2 weeks almost, by the time the podcast comes out, probably 2 weeks. And I have the honor of being a bridesmaid in her wedding, which is going to be super fun. However, I have been having the hardest time finding shoes. I found some shoes that I thought were going to be good, and then I realized the venue and I was like, oh, these are not going to be good. So...
Yeah, you can't wear pumps in a barn.
Yeah, like, and I think I could, like, the barn thing isn't what scares me. It's, like, in the grass, you know, and I don't want to mess up the shoes, and I don't want to mess up the dress, so I need a chunkier heel is really the problem. But the problem is that I live in Oregon, like, northern Oregon, where it rains a lot. And so everything here right now has just switched over into boots. It's just boots, boots, boots. Like, that's all they sell at the moment, because that's all Oregon people need at the moment. So I've now gone through like 3 pairs of shoes that are just totally unacceptable, and it's becoming a problem. You wouldn't think that like nude or like tan shoes, well, it is supposed to be more nude than tan, but like
beige.
You wouldn't think they'd be beige. Thank you. I was saying the word, but I wanted a better word. Beige shoes. You wouldn't think they'd be so hard to find is really my thing, but they are, and I'm having a hard time. So hopefully when I'm in Georgia before the wedding, I can find some shoes that are gonna be really cute and really comfy, because that's the main issue. They're either cute or they're comfy, and I need both because I'm old.
Well, worst comes to worst, I've got a backup pair for you, but
magnificent.
I advise going shopping.
I really want something closed-toed because my toes are a problem right now.
I think everyone's are. I cannot tell you the last time I got a pedicure.
I mean, I got one in, when was I in Georgia last? In, like, July?
Yeah, I think so. I think that was around the time that I got one.
Yeah.
Because it was, like, right when everything had died down in Georgia for COVID, for, like, that split week where things felt safe, and now it is super not safe anymore. So I have not gotten a pedicure since. But my heels are something, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to
lie. And I've been giving myself pedicures.
Oh, that's good. I have not been doing that. But I've also...
I have the little cheese grater thing.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I've just been shoving my feet in boots and being like, it's fine.
Well, for me, it hurts. Like, if you go long enough without a pedicure, it hurts.
I mean, there's... I've got some... I need to take better care of my feet is really the moral of this story.
The rant of the week is take better care of your feet, and then shoe shopping is easy.
Sure. It's really just a PSA to shoe manufacturers that I need nude heels that don't slice the back of my heels open, are chunky, like 2 inches, and cute.
Shelby, what you're asking for is impossible. Because you also want it closed-toed, so that changes things.
I do want it closed-toed. I know.
I'm actually, like, picturing the shoe that you've just designed, and it is honestly, I'm not surprised the fashion industry hasn't made it, because it looks hideous when you combine all those things.
It could be, like, a wedge. Like a wedge.
You need to go to, like, Clark's or some, like, you know those old
the
people,
old people
shoe, stores?
Shoe stores? Yeah, I know. I know who I am.
Honestly, though, they have some cute things sometimes.
Sometimes, but I doubt the wedding shoes I find in the end are going to be adorable. It's fine. It's a long dress. No one's going to be able to see.
Yeah, she's literally stressing for nothing.
Yeah, they'll see, like, a glimpse of nude.
your shoes will be seen, so this will be a lot more fun for you come next summer.
Yeah, but if you do nude pumps, I have a really cute, comfortable pair.
You're free to wear nude pumps in the historic building with a non-building code staircase, as well as uneven brick. And the porches are actually slanted also to allow rainwater to run off of them. So, like, it's a whole nightmare for heels. There's a reason I got, like, chunky kitten heels.
Cool, I'm wearing flats.
Well, your feet will be on display, so we'll see about that. You'll be the only one in a short dress.
Oh, that's true, and I'll be right up front.
Yeah, you Yikes. Will be kind of front and center. So for those of y'all wondering...
Well, nobody's supposed to be looking at me anyways.
Yeah, Shelby's not a bridesmaid. She's my officiant. So when we say front and center, we would mean, like, she will be between me and my man. Right there. In
yeah,
all
but
the
no
pictures.
One's supposed to be looking at me. They're supposed to be looking at the couple in love. And oh, yikes. Don't look at me.
Oh, in other wedding news, I have been trying to lose weight and in turn have gained some. So, like, this is really fun. It's a fun, stressful time. Weddings are awesome. We love it.
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I dropped off my bridesmaid's dress and it's getting tailored. So I was like, all right, my size cannot fluctuate. And then I proceeded to have an adult beverage with lots and lots of calories every night this week. And I have not worked out enough to earn that.
I'll be honest. Matt got, like, minor surgery on his foot, and he's a big baby. So we have not been to the gym in, like, 3 weeks. So, like, there's a reason I started gaining the weight, but it's fine.
It's
I can
fine.
Lose it again.
It'll be
fine. But yeah,
fine.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, what's your rant of the
My
week?
My rant of the week, before we run out of time, is the stuff going on in Nigeria, which is absolutely not okay. So, essentially, it's pretty similar to the fact that Black Lives Matter protesters here are being shot with rubber bullets and gassed and no one's doing anything about it, and they're being taken off in unmarked cars and nobody's doing anything about it because we live in a fascist police state that has convinced everyone that that's okay, and it's absolutely not. But neither here nor there. In Nigeria, there is a special police force called SARS, and it's S-A-R-S, and they were basically there to crack down on, like, robberies and looting and stuff, and it was invented in, I want to say, the 80s, and they basically just became, like, a gang with police, or with government-authorized violence, you know?
Ooh, they're privateers. Yeah,
so it's really a bad situation because they, like, kill people all the time.
Yikes.
So anyway, there have been these protests because every few years there comes, like, a referendum, or not a referendum, but the government says, like, we're going to get rid of SARS, we're going to get rid of SARS, and then they never actually do. So recently, the leader, oh, I think it's a president, I'm not sure, I should have done more research, but the president of Nigeria said, like, okay, we're going to get rid of SARS. And everyone was like, okay, well, then do it this time. Don't just say it like the other 5 times you've just said it. And so they started protesting. And SARS showed up and shot all of them.
Oh, shoot.
Like, not with rubber bullets, with actual bullets.
With actual bullets. Okay.
Yeah. Like, just started firing into the crowd willy-nilly.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's not what you want. That's so crazy.
No. And so it's a bad situation over there, and it's, like, not a one-off. It's happening still. It's continuing to happen. It's, they're killing a lot of people, and I've seen some actual, like, footage of some really brave people who have filmed these events, and it's horrifying, because there's no war going on. It's not a civil war. It's not anything like that. It's just this special police force murdering people in the streets, and, like, there's nothing anyone can do about it because they're supported by the government.
That's crazy. Just, like, a reign of terror, like, state-sponsored.
Yeah. It's pretty awful. But yeah, I advise everyone to do whatever research they can into that. And, you know, if you can help out the situation in any way, I'm pretty sure there were links to, like, donate to funds for the protesters to, like, go to the hospital and stuff. And stuff like that. And then also just, you know, raising awareness because it's not really being talked about in Western media. I heard about it on TikTok and then I, like, found an article online because I was like, whoa, what's going on? Because I had just seen the footage that somebody posted on TikTok of them getting shot. And I was like, what is going on in Nigeria? Wow. And I had to, like, look it up and search for it. It wasn't, like, a major headline.
I think I saw something about it. There was a hashtag on Twitter.
It's very much a social media campaign right now.
Yeah. I mean, that's how, like, most of these things start. Yeah. It's how you raise awareness.
Yeah, real news has not yet picked up on it as of the time of this recording.
Well, we're still obsessed with whatever the debate last night was.
My fiance watched it. I did not. My mom also watched it. I did not. They said it was good because Trump had to be muted and it was funny watching him be muted, but
I was going to watch it.
He said he was the best president for people of color since Abraham Lincoln, and I'm just like, JFK.
He said he was the least racist person in that room too.
I'm sorry. The laughter came out of me.
That was a direct quote that he spoke to the moderator.
Remember when Trump, the Trump Realty brand or whatever, like, renting out all the apartments in his towers got, like, sued class action style because they weren't renting to black people? Do we remember that?
That was the other thing. I do remember that. That was the other thing. He accused Biden of having a lot of homes. Which is, first of all, hypocritical as all get out.
Oh, the home that they're saying Biden has that it doesn't make sense for him to have on his salary, he literally hasn't lived there since the 90s, like, since we were born. He sold the house in, like, 1993, if I'm remembering correctly. And they're like, how could he afford it? Because he's a senator and they only make this much. And it's like, because in the 90s, houses were affordable.
Yeah, the house that he bought in, like, 1996, he paid, like, $300,000 for it.
And it's massive. Nowadays, it would be a $1 million home. Easy. Easy.
Yeah. Easily.
And nothing's changed. Nothing has changed. The houses have not changed. They have not been torn down and rebuilt. It's just inflation. Remember that when you're buying a home. It's just inflation.
Yep. That's what's here to screw you over.
All right. Well, we could rant all day about all the evils of the world, but
we really could.
I think it's time that we shift away from Potomac. What? And into the Below Deck Med reunion.
Below Deck Med.
So this was the reunion. Shelby and I did watch a couple episodes back at the beginning when Hannah got fired. But Shelby has not seen this season, so we just jumped right into the reunion.
Yeah, I haven't seen the season. I've seen a season of Below Deck Med when Finley and I were living together.
You're welcome.
I enjoyed it. But it's not something that I watch on my own. So we watched a couple episodes and we thought we were going to do it for the first episode and then the timing didn't work out. So, yeah. So, reunion.
Reunion time. So, for the record, Shelby did actually see the two episodes where the lead up to Hannah getting fired and the aftermath of Hannah getting fired. So, she did actually see how that went down. That is the only thing she has seen for this reunion. What were your thoughts about just the pure chaos that this reunion was?
Okay, it was really, I was so annoyed. I was so annoyed the whole time, starting off. I was just so annoyed because it seemed like the whole reunion was just an excuse for freaking Sandy and Hannah to keep fighting with each other. And I was like, this isn't productive. This isn't helpful. This is just a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got really mad.
I can
like,
tell.
Like, this is stupid. This is a waste of my time. This is a waste of Andy's time. This is a waste of everyone else's time. This is a waste of Kiko's time. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, though, having watched the entire season and the blatant hypocrisy that was laid out, I kind of enjoyed watching Sandy be taken to task over and over and over and have to change her story over and over and over to try and make herself look not as bad as she is. Because she went through like 5 different stories for every different issue that Hannah brought up because none of her stories made sense or lined up.
Well, and she would settle on, it's not personal, it's professional. And if you have to keep repeating that, it's not coming across.
I don't think that I've ever had a boss say that to me. And if I did, I don't know that they would be a good boss. Because if you have to say to somebody, I don't personally hate you, I professionally hate you.
Like, let me make that distinction real quick.
You're clearly doing something wrong. Okay, but let's not skip ahead. What did you think about how the Kiko stuff played out?
Well, first of all, so I didn't really get to see Kiko that much. I think he was like, the episode I started on was the aftermath of him getting fired, but he seems like a really sweet guy. Like, just did not deserve the hell that this crew put him through.
No. Not at all. And what got me was that everyone kept saying, like, he wasn't up to the task, he wasn't up to the task, he wasn't up to the task. And I just kept going back to, okay, he had like 2 people that complained about one of his dishes, but by the time they got off the boat, they said he was the best chef ever. And then, like, they tipped based off him, and they were really good tips. And he had one charter, like, right before he got fired. It might have been 1 or 2 charters before, where they was supposed to be 6 people. And it ended up being they brought 6 other people, like, back from the beach. So he fed 12 people a 6-course dinner with, like, 2 hours notice. He made 72 plates.
That is adaptability.
And they loved it. Like, they could not sing his praises high enough. No dish got a complaint. It was incredible. Nobody thought he would be able to do it, and he was just like, all right, I'm here, I got a chance, let's prove myself, you know. And after that, for some reason, Sandy just kept hammering him and hammering him and hammering him. And I'm sorry, but if your boss is telling you what you're doing wrong every day and never telling you what you're doing right, you just, it's like a cyclical thing in your mind where you're just like, I can't do anything right. What does she want from me? I can't do anything right. Let me try this. I've never done this before, but I'll try this, you know? And you just get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. There's actual, like, science, right, behind how to give appropriate feedback. And you do need to, like, if you say, like, okay, in the classroom, if you're trying to correct a student's behavior, right? Like, let's say they're leaning back in their chair and you want all 4 on the floor, right? You don't say, stop leaning back. You say, remember to keep all 4 on the floor, right? You phrase it in a positive language, and it's more likely to be followed through, right? And I feel like corporate America would, and just bosses and anyone in a management position would really benefit from some of the science of, it's behavioral science. Yeah. It's how people work, right? So, yeah, use it. being negative every time.
Yeah, that's why, like, with dogs and stuff, we train them with positive reinforcement.
Exactly, exactly. That was Pavlov. Yeah. The Pavlovian response, yeah. Positive reinforcement is going to do so much better. The lesson's going to stick. You're going to learn so much more from positive reinforcement, and you should definitely be using that as a boss. It shouldn't be just critique.
Yeah. And like Sandy, I honestly cannot think back to other than right after that 72 course meal where she said, like, hey Kiko, you're doing a great job. It was always, if you don't do better, I'm gonna have to replace you. Well, that was not up to par. I'm gonna have to replace you. You really need to do better. We've had this conversation several times. I'm gonna have to get a new chef if this doesn't get better.
I mean, like, okay, so the season I watched was the season with Matt, and he kept putting onions in everyone's food.
No, that was Adam.
Was it Adam? My bad. Adam.
There's never been a Matt. That's my fiance.
I don't know
it's
why.
It's a typical white boy name.
I think that's what it was. That's what it was.
They're both in the Bible. It's fine.
Anywho, Adam. And he kept putting onions in everyone's food, and she let him get by with that for like 3 weeks, and there was never talk of I'm going to replace you and I'm going to fire you, right? Like,
no, he didn't just keep putting onions in people's food. He kept, like, purposefully messing up people's food that he didn't like. So somebody said, like, I don't want any onions, so he put extra onions in it just to prove to them that they wouldn't be able to notice.
Yeah, exactly. And Sandy didn't fire him for that, but she fired Kiko for, like, one. Like, I didn't see Biggest
Night. And
he lied
to her about it, remember?
Yeah, he did lie about it.
Yeah, and she was just hard on Kiko.
Yeah. But then, so what did you think? There was a lot of accusations, and I didn't just hear this from the show, but I have a friend who also watches the show. What did you think of this accusation that, not that Hannah did it on purpose, but it was Hannah's fault that Kiko had Vegas Night go so wrong?
I think we need to listen to Kiko in that situation, where everyone else is saying it's Hannah's fault, it's Hannah's fault, and Kiko goes, no, it's 100% my fault, because I did not know what Vegas food was, which, first of all, what is Vegas food? I don't even know.
I don't either.
Like, I would think drunken party food, which is what he served them. But anyway, Hannah basically said, like, she did say to him several times, you can make all this food, but present it nicely. Just present it nicely. Like, you can make a nice presentation of it. And, she also told him to do, like, a seafood tower or something like that, and he didn't do that. So he didn't follow Hannah's instructions. And he did Google it after he talked to Hannah, and he was just like, I don't know what I'm doing, you know? And I don't think that Hannah really bears much responsibility there, because Kiko doesn't think she does. We have to remember that the show is edited in a way to make everyone look as dramatized as possible, and usually that's in a negative way. But he says, like, it was on me. I should have gone to the captain. I should have said, like, what's Vegas food? You know, like, I should have sought out other people's opinions rather than just one person and the internet. And, you know, I just thought it was a really sad situation. I thought Hannah was really rooting for him. And if you watch it back, the night that she had the panic attack, which is basically what she got fired for, was because Kiko had gotten fired and she felt so guilty. So it's not even like Hannah was absolving herself of any guilt. Like, she will say, I felt terrible, but what could I do?
Yeah.
Like, I gave him some advice, but he didn't have to take it. He did, and it's really sad, and I lost my friend. But, yeah.
Yeah.
There wasn't much to be done there. What did you think about Malia, though? All the Malia stuff. We have special thoughts about Malia.
Yeah, I have a really hard time with Malia. I've had a hard time with Malia. And that's mostly because in the first season I saw her, she slept with both of her bosses. Now, I don't care if you're getting laid at work with coworkers, you know, whatever, go get yours. But the sleeping up the hierarchy is really problematic to me, and I've had a really hard time, ever having any respect for her.
Because that's also how she got a promotion. It's not just that she was sleeping with her boss. She was sleeping with her boss, and then he promoted her.
Yeah. So that's always left a really bad taste in my mouth. And so with her being back, it really bothered me. And then just how fast she turns on people who she calls her friends, right? Because before Bugsy got on the boat, she was all about Hannah, 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 right? And then the second Bugsy's on the boat, she's always with Bugsy, and then the second Tom comes on the boat, like, that was just,
yeah.
I just had a really hard time with the hypocrisy.
I had a really hard time with Sandy portraying her as a good leader, because I'm sorry, I never saw Maria lead.
Malia.
As a Leo, I consider myself a good leader, all right? I can recognize not everyone has the same strengths. You do this, you do that, you do this, let's get it done. You know, I think I'm very good at doling out tasks and getting a task accomplished. However, Malia is just awful. She curses at them and called them just horrible names whenever they were like...
Oh, yeah, there was that scene where she cursed at someone. I forgot about that.
At two of them, yeah. Because they wanted to roll up the slide, and she was like, no, just move it. And they were like, we can get it done. We can roll it up really fast. And she was like, quit effing around. You're being a-holes, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And, like, she called them effing a-holes 3 or 4 times. And then she goes to Sandy and is like, they don't respect me.
Yeah, no, if you're cursing at me, I'm not going to respect you. Just full stop.
Yeah. And then Sandy said the reason that she thought Malia would make a great bosun is because the night Malia made out with both of her bosses without telling either one, she, well, I guess the chef's not her boss, but he is a higher rank than her. She went and was like being a drunken a-hole to Hannah. And Hannah was just like, whatever. And Malia was like, if you have something to say, say it to my face. Because she was just drunk. And Sandy was like, when I saw that, I knew she'd be a great leader because she stands up for herself. Let's look at what she was standing up for herself about.
There's the quote. Yeah. No, it was, I just,
We have thoughts on Malia.
Yeah, I don't like Malia. And, you know, it could be that I came into this situation already not liking Malia. And so it might be a big blind spot for me, but I don't like Malia.
Well, for me also, if you are, okay, so if you have a, like, let's call Sandy, like, the district manager, right? She's in charge of all the different departments. Malia is the head of a department. If you have to go to your district manager every single day for advice on how to handle, sorry, it's early in the morning. My voice is not good.
It's not that early in the morning.
If you have to go to your district manager every single day and be like, I just don't know how to handle this problem, to the point where they have to handle it for you, you're gonna lose your job.
Oh, yeah.
How does that set you up to be a... Sandy's like, oh, she'll make a great captain one day. How if she doesn't have you there to make every decision for her?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it wasn't like towards the end of the season she went to Sandy less. It was the opposite. Not to mention, she was defying direct orders from Sandy, and then Sandy would praise her for it. Because at the end, she was like, you need to get out of the galley. When Tom was there, she was like, if he fails, let him fail on his own. I don't want to see you in the galley again. That night, Malia's in there plating the food because Tom could never actually prepare a meal by himself, so much for him being better than Kiko. And Sandy was like, you're going to make such a great captain because you know every aspect of the boat and you're just willing to help out wherever you're needed.
Oh, the hypocrisy, like, hurts. It physically
pains
me.
It's so bad. If I was working for that situation, I think I would have quit.
On the spot.
Have you seen the Pete meme that everyone was talking about?
No, so I never did look up the Pete meme. Maybe I should do that right now, because I'm on a computer.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to say what was on it because of how bad it is.
We won't say it.
But basically, you're going to Google it. You're going to look at it, and you're going to say, no, this can't be it. This is too awful. And then you're gonna Google it again a few more times, and that be the only thing that comes up, and you're gonna be like, oh, he really posted
all right,
that.
I'm trying to find it. Oh no, was it?
It's definitely BDSM-y. Yeah. The look of horror on Shelby's face
as
she's looking at this. That is what he posted. About, like, when you'd start dating a white guy. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he absolutely should have been fired. Why would he post?
Yeah.
Why would he think this is funny?
That's why everyone was like, he was a disturbed guy. Like, this is a disturbing thing to post. There's no other word
There's
for
really
it.
Really not. This is so disturbing. And his caption on it. Ugh. Oh.
Yeah.
Why? I'm so grossed out. I didn't realize it was this bad. Oh my god.
Yeah, it was not just a situation where, like, other Bravo stars have gotten in trouble for, like, tweeting the N-word or something. Like, this was another level of sexism and racism that is completely disturbing that someone would think that.
That's it's appalling. So gross. Oh my gosh, I'm disgusted.
I feel like if you post that, any apology you make about it is null and void because you still thought it was okay to post. Yeah, you still
looked at it and laughed and thought it was funny. And thought, want to share this with someone.
Yeah. All right. So, he deserved Absolutely. To be fired for sure. But here's the thing. This sounds awful. I wanted him to be on the reunion. And the reason I wanted that is because he has been the only Bravo star, or from this, you know, Below Deck Med season, to come out and say, yes, Hannah had what she had on the boat, but every time we went ashore, Malia was doing coke. Every night out. And he said, how is that any different?
That is an intense accusation.
Yeah, Malia responded and was like, I don't know when I've ever done coke or when you would even know about it if I had, but it's very different when we're just getting drunk and having a fun night out, not on the boat, as opposed to when we are on the boat, because we're not responsible for any lives.
Yikes. Okay. Cool. It would be interesting. I wonder, you know, because, like, if it's just him, then, you know, it could be true, it might not be. I wonder what the others think.
I think by that point he had been fired, and so he was not beholden to any contract or anything like that. And he wasn't hoping to go on the show again.
Yeah.
Malia has already been announced as next season's bosun. Like, her and Sandy are coming back next season. They're the only ones so far.
Yikes.
So I think that everyone else would have a lot more to lose.
Oh, if they said anything.
By accusing her.
Yeah. Because you've got to stay on their good sides if you want to get back on the show. Because they're the ones the show is about now. Okay.
Yeah. So it's definitely something to think about. I think she for sure does hard drugs and is just a...
I mean...
We don't like to cuss, but she is a cuss word. Let's put it that way.
Do you know the amount of people who I have partied with in my youth who would just go to the bathroom and do coke? Like, everybody does coke. Which is why, you know, the fact that we have so many incarcerated. Yeah. I didn't.
I know you did, and I'm concerned who did. It wasn't me.
Well, no.
And we went to a lot of parties together, yeah, so no, it wasn't who was you. Doing coke?
There was a lot of people who did coke.
I need specifics. When? What parties? What year of college, first of all?
2016. 2017.
When we were in the social group? Was it people in the social group that we were in?
It was never anybody super close to us.
Was it downtown? Would it be the year that we were going downtown a lot? So it was in the social group we were in. And you never gave me that ammo against these people, really?
I never had any proof. It was just rumors.
We're going to talk after this podcast. Y'all, I have just been divulged some new juicy intel. Okay.
Oh, no. It was never just the... I understand what you mean by social group. No. It was not just the social group. It was a different social group we were in.
Are we talking about our sorority or not? I'm confused now.
We're not talking... I did not realize that we were talking in code about the sorority. We were not... I was not talking about the sorority.
Who were we around that was doing coke? Was it our neighbors?
No.
Okay. Well, this is a discussion for afterwards, because Shelby's not going to tell me on air.
I'm not going to divulge that on air.
I genuinely thought I had never been around it, so this is news to me. Yeah. That's how oblivious me is. Okay. With our last 10 minutes, let's talk about the Hannah stuff, because I have some thoughts. All right?
Oh, but actually, real quick, I just wanted to finish my thought about the coke and how everybody does coke. We need to release all the people who are on mandatory minimums for crack cocaine. All right, moving on.
Yes. I mean, even Newt Gingrich has come out and said
I wanted to throw it out there on the podcast to specify my thoughts. Anywho, Hannah stuff.
Yes. So I thought another episode of blatant hypocrisy that Sandy really dodged was the fact that when Pete was calling Malia sweetheart, which, yes, I get it, is a microaggression and it sucks and it's annoying, but Malia never actually said, hey, stop calling me sweetheart, I'm not your sweetheart. She went to Sandy, Sandy said it, and then she said it to them. With Hannah and Lara actually put her hands on Hannah. Lara was being wackadoodle insubordinate. Like, just beyond, I don't understand how this woman had ever had a job before. And whenever Sandy sat them down, she was like, you don't have to respect Hannah. You just have to respect her position.
Well, I think that's because Sandy doesn't respect Hannah.
I don't think Sandy respects any of the interior. I think that as a department, she views them as glorified servants. I don't think that she has any respect for any chief stews. Because she herself worked on deck.
Yeah, she was never a stew.
Yeah. So I don't think she has any respect for the department whatsoever. Especially because they're not on track to ever become captain. Only the deckhands are. So, I don't know. But then Sandy claimed she didn't know about what was happening with Lara. And we saw Hannah go to her like 4 or 5 times being like, I don't know what to do about this woman. This is crazy. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And Sandy was just like, Hannah never brought it to me. She would only bring me 3 or 4 sentences, whereas Malia would paint me the full picture. I'm sorry, but when have you ever had a boss that wants you to actually sit there and whine to them about the entire story? They want you to come with like, 1, 2, 3, this is what happened, this is what I need your help with. Quick, short, easy.
Yeah. Usually they're busy. They're managing a whole team. They've got other stuff to do. If you're bringing a problem to them anyways, like, yeah, they want to help you, but like,
they also they don't want to sit there and listen to you.
They don't have time to sit there for you to have like a 30-minute whining pity party.
Yeah. And then she was like, and it's not personal, it's professional. It's not personal, it's professional. And it's like, well, Hannah was being more professional. You like Malia on a more personal level.
Yeah, you really do.
That is what it is. And then whenever she tried to say that boats of this size normally run with only 2 stews for 12 guests, that was laughable.
That was, it's a big boat.
Like, genuinely.
And it has to be kept, like, spick and span, like, super levels of clean, like.
And then what really, really got me, because she did it with Kiko, she did it with Hannah, and she basically said, anytime they said, well, I have done this in the past and I learned a lot from doing this, with Kiko it was when he worked on the 110-meter ship, and with Hannah, it was whenever she was saying, like, I've never seen a boat of this size run with only 2 stews, but okay. She was like, well, I've actually seen both of your resumes, and you only did that for 11 days with reference to Kiko, and you've never worked on a big boat, Hannah.
That was so...
Like, she just really went after their work experience. It was so snarky. And I'm sorry, if I only did a job for 2 weeks, I still did that job. Period.
I still have some, like, I still have some experience from it, even if I wasn't there for very long. I still learned something.
Yeah. Exactly. It was just ridiculous. And then she was like demonizing Hannah for only being there for a paycheck. And I really liked the watch with Kate, or the, not watch with Kate, the after show with Kate, because Kate was like, I don't want to work with somebody that's not there for just the paycheck. Like, you shouldn't love your job that much, because otherwise you're not going to do as good a job. If you're monetarily, like, what's the word? Whenever motivated? You're like, yes. If you're financially motivated, you're going to do a better job than if you're just passion motivated, in my opinion.
I do disagree with you a little bit on that, but I don't think that it's, I don't really don't think it's like, I feel like it's negligible, honestly, like, because I get paid nothing.
Let me rephrase. Really job, nobody,
because I'm passionate about it.
Nobody is a server.
Oh, yeah.
For enjoying being a server. And that's really, like, you're working for a tip. And that's what I mean by it's better to be, like, financially motivated. Because you're trying to get as good of a tip as possible. Whereas if you just love the boat, you're not trying to get a good tip. You're trying to work on a boat.
I can see how that would make more sense.
Yeah, I should explain myself better. Like, not for every job, but for that one in particular, you should be financially motivated. And then, what did you think of all the drug stuff? Let's just get into it with our last 5 minutes.
Okay, I'm just going to read the two notes that I made on it and just throw them out there.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is a bit sarcastic, and it says, it was in response to everyone talking about how if you're on these drugs, you can't work on a boat. I was like, okay, cool. So maritime law apparently doesn't allow anxiety medication. Good to know the industry discriminates against mental health as a whole. And then my...
Not true, because Captain Lee had a season with Kat, who was on Xanax, I believe. It was some kind of anti-anxiety drug, and everyone was like, why are you acting weird? She went to the captain, and she was like, look, I'm sorry, I'm on these drugs. They are prescribed, here's my prescription, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, cool, get back to work.
Well, so that was my first, that's why it was a bit sarcastic. And then my second one was, when Sandy kept saying you lie at the very end. And I was trying to get through my blind spot and put on Sandy's pair of shoes. And I didn't realize that Sandy was a recovering addict of some kind. So I could see how Hannah not doing the prescription could be a lie of omission, but she never, like, when asked about the drugs, she never lied about them. She didn't tell you, but she never lied about them. And then hearing Sandy's history now, I could see how she would be a bit extremely strict about having a substance on board, even if it was prescribed anxiety medication. Because, like, even if Hannah, I don't think she even took any of the Valium, but, like, even if the person prescribed the drugs.
No, that's one thing I need to mention real quick, is everyone keeps saying they have footage of Hannah taking the Valium when Hannah said, I never took it while on board. We have footage of Hannah putting it in the bathroom, never taking it. Anytime she takes a pill, we see her pop open a bottle, pour it out. You can hear that. That sounds very different to taking a sheet, sliding that out of a box, popping a pill out of the sheet. And we never have audio or footage of her doing that with the Xanax. I do not like the way Bravo has portrayed this.
So, I mean, my thought was really, like, what if there was someone else on board who was an addict and who had seen the Valium and then went and took Hannah's Valium? Like, I could understand why it needs to be locked up. Not because I think that, you know, the person it was prescribed to would be abusing it, but, like, what if it got stolen? What if someone else was an addict, not in recovery yet, you know? So I can see when this first happened, I was like, this is just a bunch of crap. And it is. But I can see why she was super, like, ridiculously strict about it. I still don't think she handled it right.
No. And so here's what I liked. Okay, so I watched the, like, watch with Kate of the actual episode of Hannah getting fired. And Kate actually said she does not like Hannah. She did not think Hannah should be on the boat, period. But it's a personal matter with her and Hannah. She did say Malia was out of line. Why was she going through her stuff? And then she said that everyone has stuff on the boat and you're kind of the a-hole if you report it in terms of, like, the vape. In terms of the vape. And that she whenever the other thing at the reunion that bothered me was whenever Sandy kept saying, we saw at the beginning of the season Hannah doling out rooms. We saw her doing the room assignments. And then she said, you gave me this job. You told me to do room assignments. And Sandy was like, well, technically it's the first officer's responsibility. First officer. And Andy's like, who's the first officer? Oh, that would be Malia. Like, quit spinning everything to your favorite just because you can. And then whenever she was calling Hannah a liar and saying she couldn't trust her, it was like, can you not trust her because of her anxiety attack? Can you not trust her because of the lies? Can you not trust her because she had Valium on board? Like, what is your story here? You don't have one. You've got five and none of them make sense. It sounds like something her and Malia thought up after the season aired. And then I just want to commend Hannah before we transition. I just really want to commend Hannah for her mug because it was the best moment
of my gosh. I started laughing so hard. It really was. It was so good. I loved it. Especially because she had to be up for this reunion at 4 a.m.
She was getting ready at 3. Like, they have footage of her getting ready at 3.
Hannah did not come to play.
She's 8 months pregnant. And, you know,
and she looked flawless.
Honestly, she looked the best out of all of them. What really got me was Sandy was being really demeaning about, well, she wanted to have a boatload of babies, and now that's what she's doing. Good for her. And it's like, shut up. Why are you demeaning somebody about that?
Right? Like, feminism means that you get to pick what you want, and if you want to have a bunch of babies, have a bunch of babies.
It's so rude.
Stay home and raise your babies. I hope, like, that's not demeaning. If that's what you want, then do it.
Like, it's just everything that Sandy was saying I took issue with. And I understand that I'm a Hannah fan. However, I really don't think many people are Sandy fans after this season based on everything that I've read and seen in the blogs. Because I do follow those very closely now for this podcast. It's messed up. And also, Hannah, going back to this, Kate said that Sandy had texted her 2 seasons ago asking her to replace Hannah, and Kate said no. So Sandy's been trying to get rid of Hannah. Let's not let her fool us.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious that Sandy has not liked Hannah for a while.
Yeah. All right, let's transition to our musical before we spend an hour talking about Bravo.
Musical!
Which one did we do?
We did one of my favorite, actually, at the moment, because this changes, you know, pretty often. But at the moment, this is my favorite musical. I love this musical. I'm a little obsessed with it. We did Hadestown. And it was so, so much fun. I enjoyed it. Finley hated it, of course.
Let's tell the audience why Finley hated it. Shelby sends me a bootleg.
Well, there's not a professional camera recording phone of recording. It released yet.
I understand, but you sent me a camera phone recording from the balcony, so I could not see anything. I could barely hear anything. I could see the big stuff that was happening, but any facial expressions, any words.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't normally see a facial expression, like if you were sitting in the balcony.
That's why I don't sit in the balcony, Shelby. You also made me confront my fears because if you recall, when we went to see Book of Mormon, we had balcony seats. And what happened? Finley had a panic attack that got us some handicap seats on the ground floor. And now you're like, here, watch it as though you're sitting in the balcony again. This is fun.
I honestly didn't notice that.
So Shelby's inconsiderate and I was unhappy. No, I'm joking, but... It was not, I should also say that this particular Greek myth that Hadestown is about is my actual, like, most hated. I was going to say least favorite, but I genuinely dislike this story. It's not even that I don't like it enough. I dislike it.
Yeah, with Orpheus and Eurydice. So I guess if you haven't seen Hadestown, Hadestown tells the parallel stories of Hades and Persephone and Eurydice and Orpheus. And the storyteller is Hermes, and he's telling this story. It takes place in kind of like a depression era, that's described by the playwright, town of some count, of some kind.
Yeah.
And it's very folksy, bluegrassy, and it So it follows Orpheus as he falls in love with Eurydice and then is a terrible, I guess they do get married, terrible husband. And then he's
and
trying to...
And there's a really awkward sex scene in the middle of that that just did not need to be on stage. At all.
So while he's doing this with Eurydice, he's trying to write a song that'll bring spring back because the seasons have been out of whack because Persephone and Hades, who were in love, are no longer in love.
I also took issue with that. Hades and Persephone were never in love. He kidnapped her. The reason she goes back up 6 months out of the year is because she hated it and hated him.
It is not
a love story.
This is the adaptation. In this version, Persephone fell in love with Hades, and that's why she went to the underworld.
Meh.
But their love has soured in this version. And so Orpheus is writing a song that has magical powers that creates flowers in springtime, right? And so then
that's how that works.
He's so obsessed with writing this song that he's not making money of any kind, and he's not, like, Eurydice is, like, trying to feed them, and he's so obsessed with this song that he, like, doesn't even hear her when she's calling for him.
Yeah.
So then Hades comes up, and he's like, hey, little songbird, which is actually, like, the creepiest song in the musical, in my opinion.
Everything Hades said was creepy.
Yeah, I know. I love
you can't
Patrick
have
Page.
That deep of a voice and not be creepy.
He's so good. Patrick Page also played. We won't do this one because, well, we might do it, but we'll do it in like season 5 if we go that long. But he also played the creepy priest in the stage version of Hunchback of Notre Dame. Yeah. He's so good at these creepy roles. I love Patrick Page. His voice is so deep. Anywho.
I genuinely think something, like, has to be a little bit wrong with you if you, like, always want to play the villain and, like, be really creepy. Not just the villain, but, like, a creepy one at that. Like, what's his name? Who was in The Walking Dead and Boondock Saints? Norman Reedus. Genuinely think that man has killed somebody, honestly. Like, in his youth or something. Like, something was off, alright? You are not all there.
He originated the role of, yeah, the Green Goblin, the Grinch, Hades,
lovely.
Yeah, I love him. Anywho, yeah, so Hades comes up and he tempts Eurydice into signing a contract to work in Hadestown, because he's like, you'll always be fed, you'll have work. And she's starving, so she says yes. And that's how she ends up in Hadestown.
Mm-hmm.
Orpheus comes out of his songwriting haze and is like, oh crap, where's Eurydice? And so he has to go find her, which is when one of my favorite songs plays, which is Wait For Me. My absolute favorite song is the reprise, because we get to hear Eurydice's actress, Ava, I'm going to butcher her last name, Noblezada? I totally butchered that. I'm so sorry. I love you. Anywho, we get to hear her voice. I love her. She has the coolest part in that song. Anywho, Orpheus goes and gets her. That's the song, Wait For Me, is what they perform at the Tonys, which is what got me into this musical, because I first heard the soundtrack, and I was like, ew, no. And then I saw the Tonys performance, and I was like, oh, maybe. And then I fell in love with it.
I'm still on the no, for the record. Just the not.
Which is actually...
Like, that one song that is like, eh, to the na, na, na. That's me with this musical. Enjoy my singing. It's great. And also trying not to cuss in a song that cusses.
Yeah. I'm sure everyone knows how the myth ends. I'm going to skip over the second act.
Oh, I don't think they do. Matt did not know how how it ended, and so he was watching it.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
He was watching it, and I was like, do you know how the story ends? And he was like, no. And I was like, okay, I won't ruin it for you. And then he was like, what? That's how it ends? And I was like, yeah. It's not, like, a happy tale.
Yeah, even... I would say, even when I knew how it ends, when I heard the music for the first time, the ending was so haunting to me. I really loved it. Anywho, things I love about this musical.
To me, it's not haunting. It's like typical white boy. You can't just follow the rules.
Oh, well, not about like Orpheus looking back, but the song at the very end that Hermes sings that like is super circular with the same lyrics.
Well, this is, okay, going back to what I was talking about, because I don't know what you're talking about. But the, I think it cut off one song early, to be quite frank with you, because I did not, like, I was following along the names of the songs on Wikipedia, and I didn't hear the last one, I don't think, because it did, like, abruptly end the video. But anyway, I took issue with the fact that, like, while they're walking, she is singing, like, I'm following you, I'm following you, I'm here, I'm here. And so she's, like, telling him that she's there, and he still looks back.
Well, he can't hear her. He couldn't hear her, so he didn't know that she was there, but he didn't have faith in her because he's awful. Oh, yeah, we raise our cups.
Yeah. I didn't think I heard that
one. Yeah, that one wasn't in there. Yeah. So the Road to Hell reprise is really good. I like it because of its haunting tone. Yeah. They do the raise our cups after the curtain call, which we don't see in the bootleg. Well, things I like about the musical. I love the self-awareness, which you probably didn't hear if you didn't understand any of the dialogue. But I like how the characters are written, like, they're aware that it's a story and that they're trapped in this story. So, like, he's like, and it's a sad song, and we'll sing it anyways. It's a tragedy, you know. I love it. And then, like, the end of Act 1, Persephone's like, anyone want a drink? Because it ends really sad. I love that.
Yeah, I'm very, like, clogged up, too. I don't know what it is. I think it's this morning recording.
It's not morning, though, for you.
Yes, it is. I am operating on the high school summer break timeline. So I go to bed at 4 a.m. I wake up at 1 to 2. Shelby woke me up 3 hours early.
I woke her up at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's good for her. Just so we're aware, I got up at 8 and she got up at 11.
You have a real job. You're used to this. I am experiencing the pandemic unemployment, and I am living my best life in it. Gaining weight, being super anxious. It's a fun time.
I could talk about this musical for hours, so I'm going to sum it up so that we can hear Finley's thoughts on it.
Oh, I don't have any thoughts other than it was bad.
Then I'm gonna keep talking. So
go for it.
I know that you hated this, but I really actually like the motif of the la 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 la. I really enjoy it.
That made it almost unwatchable to me. If you don't have somebody with either Justin Timberlake or Usher's falsetto up there, don't attempt a falsetto on stage. Period.
Yeah, which I do agree with, but I do love the motif, like, musically speaking. Yeah. What is interesting is with the Tonys, so Hadestown won Best Musical in 2019. Because it was the best. And,
That's a low bar. That's a very low bar. On the floor.
No. The actor who plays Orpheus, is usually Reeve, Reeve Carvey, and he was not the actor that we saw singing this, but he was actually the only actor not nominated, in this musical.
Yeah, because the role sucks.
It's a weird key to be singing it in. I can definitely agree with that. I still love it.
Well, and it's just a terrible role. Like, he doesn't have much of a plot purpose other than to be, like, a himbo and just come in and ruin everything with his stupidity. Yeah. Typical white dude stuff, you know.
You are correct. I will agree with you on that. I love the foreshadowing Jeez. Okay, I need to take, like, a Zyrtec. My allergies. Anywho.
Yeah, me too. It has just kicked up. Like, fall has sprung. And I'm dying. I don't have COVID, but I am stuffy. Yeah.
I love the foreshadowing and the staging at the end of Act... Was it the end of Act 1? Might have been before then. But there's a staging where they end a song very dramatically and the lights go down. And Orpheus is hugging Eurydice, and Eurydice is looking towards the hole to Hadestown. And I loved the foreshadowing in that.
So let's talk about the stage for a second, because I took extreme issue with this. Now, Hamilton also did a spinning stage. They did it well. This one, if you're gonna have wood planks that are that obvious because you want to look Great Depression era, line them up when you stop spinning the stage. Because otherwise, for people like me who are a little crazy, all we can focus on for the next hour is how the circles are no longer lined up.
Yeah.
And there were too many different circles that were not lined up. The wood planks were going four different ways at one point, and it was making me crazy. It was unbearable. Yeah. I just wanted to be like, fix it. Make it go faster, make it go slower to the point where they just line up at the end. Make it seamless. Otherwise, don't make it as obvious that, like, it's wood planks, yeah. You know? You could make a floor that's not that obvious. That's, like, just visual 101. When you're making a set, don't make it so bad that it's, like, distracting from the plot.
So two more really quick notes, because I just looked at the time and realized we're running out of time. So, I know that Build the Wall was written years before Trump ran for president, but the show didn't get to Broadway until 2019 when he was in office, so I feel like it's taken on this whole new contextual political commentary. Like, this song so eerily compares to the rhetoric you hear about, like, America building the wall, and, like, we as America, I say we, it's not us, obviously, but, like, as Americans, like, who are buying into Hades's or Trump's crap that the wall will keep us free, like, we build the wall to keep us free, to keep out the enemy, like, those lines are freaking eerie. How do walls make anyone feel free, right? Do you feel free when you're taking a Zoom call in the four walls of your bedroom? Yeah. And then my last note is why Wait For Me resonates so big, like, so, like, big to me is I feel like Orpheus sometimes, which, you know, I hate to say it, but, like, you see all these people, like, going out and having their lives and, like, getting married and having babies and graduating from grad school and having really kick-butt awesome jobs, and you're like, hold on, I'm coming, wait for me, I'll get there, I'm trying to find an alternate route. Hold on.
Yes, but in this case, the wait for me is wait for me while I descend into hell also. Yes. So I don't necessarily... Are you comparing adulthood to hell? Is that what
you're
saying? Yes,
but also in the reprise is when he's trying to walk out. The reprise is when he's trying to lead everybody out of hell. But still, just the lines of wait for me, I'm coming.
I just want a good musical that has some female agency in it. That's all I'm looking for.
I'll give you that. This, like, doesn't have great female agency. It is more than The Myth. But it doesn't have great female agency.
It's ridiculous, because you're talking about a woman who was kidnapped, and now the seasons are out of whack, so we're going to blame her for that. And then we're going to have this, you know, obnoxious white dude who's like, I can write a song and make it better. First of all, take your guitar away, Chad. No one wants to hear that right now. Second of all, it's just... Like, Eurydice was doing the thing. I'm trying really hard not to cuss. Was doing the thing and was, like, getting by. And she was actually, like, I really took issue with the line, she knew how to survive, he knew how to live. Because I think that's a really good metaphor for men and women. Like, women know how to survive and, like, put your nose down and do it and just, like, get through it, take care of the family, you know? And guys, I don't think they know how to live. I think they know how to waste everyone's effing time. You know, like, it's not sunshine and rainbows all the time, buddy. But anyway, we're talking about a girl who was kidnapped, so now we're blaming her for the seasons being out of whack. Some white dude's gonna save us, but he's gonna also neglect his wife, so his wife's gonna go down there and make a decision. And then whenever she wants to make a different decision, all of the men around her are gonna be like, well, it's only conditional on if he can accomplish a task, whether you get what you want. Ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous.
You're not wrong.
I don't like Broadway because of how sexist it is.
I've also been showing you really sexist musicals.
I don't know why. I feel like you're getting off on the torture of this more than I am.
I mean, yeah.
We're about to do Southern Charm. Get ready. I'm going to make you watch Southern Charm. It is the worst Bravo show. Enjoy it. No, actually, OC is the worst, but Southern Charm is close. In terms of racism and sexism and misogyny and all the good stuff. Like, literal line from Southern Charm is, yeah, there's a slave graveyard over there somewhere, and then they sit down to have tea. Like, on their plantation.
Oh, no.
That they're bragging about owning.
Oh, no. Okay. Yikes. That'll be torturous to watch.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm just excited for them being held to task this season. Because they finally have a BIPOC cast member, and she, like, helps take down the statue of their ancestors, of the other cast members. Because they were slaveholders.
I'm here for it. All right.
Yeah,
well,
it's great. Here for
the
reckoning.
Did we want to talk about the Great Emu War, the musical, real quick?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So first of all, none of y'all have offered to help me, and I'm a little salty about it. This musical needs to be made. This is clearly, if Hadestown can win a Tony, we are on track, people. Okay. If anyone would just help me out, we could win some Tonys. If that is how low the bar is, we can do it.
Some good music.
Second, that's why I need Lin-Manuel Miranda on call, all right? Second of all, I would like to apologize to Sam Smith for misgendering them.
That is out there in the universe.
I know they don't really care, because, like, they've given interviews saying they don't really care. It's just nice when people get it right, but I still felt bad. Because it was, you know, midnight and my brain was not functioning. And they did go by different pronouns for a very long time in their career. But anyway, third of all, I would like to take Johnny Depp out of the show completely, because I read some other stuff about him and some of the stuff that he's tweeted, and I got mad about it. I can't remember exactly what it was at this moment, but I did read something and I was like, oh, screw him, he's out of the show.
Valid. All right, bye, Johnny Depp.
Yeah, bye, Johnny Depp. You also abuse your wife, so we don't want you in the show anyway. Well, I guess they're not together anymore. But anyway, anywho. I also thought about it, and we excluded some people that really needed to be included. First of all, I think Awkwafina deserves a role.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I'm here for it. Okay, yeah, sorry. I got really excited. Yes.
I also think Mindy Kaling could be of some value here. Then, who was it? Gosh, everyone is slipping my mind. The second you start, like, actually doing stuff, it just out of the brain. And then who else was it, Shelby? I texted you. Let me see. I was texting you people that I was like, how did we forget them? Oh, yeah. George Takei. Yep. He needs to be in there. I feel like he's on the emu side for sure. I feel like he's like the... George Takei is the one that is planning the emu's battle, like,
I'm
strategy.
Here for it.
And then Kate McKinnon.
Yes,
where
we
was
need
she?
Kate McKinnon.
Also, Bruno Mars. How did I forget Bruno Mars?
I don't know. Okay. Sure, let's have Bruno.
He started off in Broadway.
Yes.
Or not Broadway, but, like, performing shit on stage. Ah, crap. Dang it. I was doing so good. Okay. But anyway, yes, we need all of those people deserve a role. And if somebody could just get back to me, I need a casting. I'm sure somebody is listening that works in casting. and has some connections. And I really need y'all's help. This is a plea. We could win a Tony. I feel like the Great Emu War, the musical, merch to come soon, is a winning idea.
I don't know that we have anyone who would buy our merch yet, but yes.
I think if people started wearing, like, two or three people start wearing the Great Emu War, the musical shirts, people would be like, what's that? And then you could give them, A, a history lesson, and B, bring them to our podcast. They would listen, they would fall in love, they would get their own shirts. Soon enough, we have a movement. We have a movement of emus. And we could have Halloween costumes, that's coming up. We could, oh my gosh, we could do, like, LARPing for the Great Emu War. We could have conventions and festivals. This is huge. This is huge to me.
Okay.
Could you not imagine people dressing up as emus and LARPing a war with Australians? It would be hysterical and they would do it.
I mean, yeah, it would be pretty fun, but like...
if we roleplay medieval knights, we can roleplay the Great Emu War.
I'm excited for what these emu costumes are going to look like.
Me too. It's just going to be, like, you know, those horse costumes where people are, like, the butt of the horse?
Yeah, but emus only have two legs.
And I'm aware. So it's one person, but the costume is as big as the horse, but you're the butt of it, right? Okay. So it juts out that far forward. Okay. And then the neck is a bit further away. So it's going to be beautiful.
I've thought about this.
I have designed the Halloween costume in my head. It's going to be inflatable, I think, so that you can, like, walk, but there's an emu in front of you.
Yeah.
You know? It's beautiful. Anywho, that's going to be it for this week.
That's the podcast.
yeah.
On that note.
We have loved having y'all. We hope you've enjoyed listening. You can find us at Bravo to Broadway on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Leave us a like and comment. Follow us. Get your friends to follow us. And then, you know, if somebody wants to put me in contact with anyone that can help with the Great Emu War, the musical, that would be lovely. And again, Shelby is still taking resumes for a soulmate. And we also still want you to rate us 1 to 10. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
Happy Halloween. Next week.